Well, thank the Lord. Amen. Appreciate being here this afternoon. Yes. Appreciate your prayers. Have a little something on my heart today, and yes. Pray the Lord bless me to be able to share it with you all. You ever do GPS on your phone? How many of you all, when you dial up that GPS address, you try to find the longest way to get there? Is that what GPS does? Does it usually try to give you the lengthiest way to get there? No, usually we want to get there right now, right? We want the shortest path possible most of the time. And sometimes people are willing to pay a pretty good penny for it to get there quicker. Yes. But it doesn't always have to be that way. I'd like to turn to Exodus chapter 13. Reading in verse 17. Says, "And it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God led them not through the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest peradventure the people repent when they see war and they return to Egypt. But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up harnessed out of the land of Egypt." You know, I think about this, and I mean, none of us wants to go the long way, right? But here God was bringing the children of Israel out of Egypt, out of bondage, out of slavery, and I can only imagine them wanting to get as quickly as possible to their destination. We're headed to a land that flows with milk and honey. Let's get there now, yes. Right? And so here they are coming out of Egypt. Was God unable to get him to the land the short way? Was his power obstructed somehow that he had to go around the Philistines because the Philistines were too mighty of an army or whatever? No. God had other reasons for why he needed the children of Israel to go the long route. And I would have to say that there's times where we would actually choose the long route. On occasions we might decide, you know, I don't necessarily need to get there right this minute. You know, maybe I'll take 5 extra minutes and miss that toll that goes all the way across, you know? And I'll have to say I do that a lot. I'll drive 10 more minutes and save all that toll money. Sometimes you might decide to take the long route because there's something that you want to see along that long route. There's an experience that you want to have. Maybe there's something along the way that you want to experience. And so you decide that you're going to go ahead and take that long route. Yes. How many of you, if your GPS shows a big old red line along your path, right? Yes. How many of you are going to do a detour? And so sometimes if we were to be able to see our future and know where we're headed and all the obstacles that are in the way, we might actually decide to take the long route too. Yes. Just to avoid some of the disasters that are maybe along the way. And so there's benefit in taking the long way around sometimes. So Israel, they needed to go the long way. The reason why they needed to go the long way is mentioned in one aspect in here where he says, lest they meet opposition. In other words, it's too soon. They're not ready. They're not ready to meet the enemy. And it's not because God was not ready to deliver them or that God was not powerful enough to deliver their enemies into their hands or anything like that. But they weren't ready. They didn't have the faith in God that they needed to overcome their enemies through faith in God. Yes. If they were going to overcome their enemies, it was going to be in their faith. And they didn't have that yet. They came out of the land of Israel and they still were wondering if God had their best interests at heart. They still didn't know that God was their deliverer and their caretaker. And that He was going to see them through. They still didn't realize all that. And so God, taking them through the long route, was able to do some things for them that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise if they had just went straight into the land. So God was able to allow them to get hungry a little bit and be able to feed them so they can see that God was going to sustain them. He allowed them to get thirsty a little bit and then they were able to cry out unto the Lord and He was able to meet that need for them. They learned a lot of things in that long route. And there's a lot of things that we're going to learn in our long route, if you will, of life that I pray that we won't miss because we're so focused on getting to our destination. You know, when I was in prison, I was looking at a long route, basically. And I mean, at first it seemed like an impossible route, that it was never going to be an end to this thing. But if you're not careful, all you see is the destination. I got to get there. You know, I've got to get however long down the road. And when you're focused like that and all you're thinking about is the destination, you miss a lot of things along the journey. And so what I want us to get to today is that the journey is very much important. It's just as important as the destination. And the things that we go on in our lives, the things that we travel through in this life, the obstacles that we face, the difficulties that we meet, all these things are part of it. And we don't want to miss any of it. You know, why would I take the long way around in order to have a scenic view of something or to see some extraordinary piece of God's creation, but then drive right past it? I went and did the long way, and then I never stopped to enjoy what it was I took the long way for. And I really feel like we have to be careful that we're not just so focused on the destination that we forget to enjoy and utilize the journey. Because the journey is very much a part of us getting to our destination, for one. So let's go to Samuel. We heard a little bit about David this morning, and here we're in Samuel chapter 16 and verse 11. And Samuel said unto Jesse, Here all thy children? And he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. You know, I when I read this account, and I don't have a problem with anybody else reading what they read on this either, but I wonder. I'm not completely certain that David knew exactly why he was anointed, or that his family knew exactly why he was anointed. Because and part of me wonders, and if he did know, then, I mean, David had a lot of grace of God to continue to do all the things that he did. And the fact that he didn't rise up against Saul at any opportunity that he had, there was multiple times where Saul was delivered into his hands. And if he had assumed that he was to be king, then it would have maybe made sense for him to destroy Saul. But he didn't do that. And when he met with his brethren at the war, his brothers didn't have any respect for him, really. And had they known that he was anointed king, then they may have looked at it a little bit differently. But to me, it doesn't really matter. Okay, David was anointed, and he was anointed to be king. And we can see that in the scriptures because God has given it to us. And so at this very moment, as a young man, he was anointed king. And we could say, well, why did it take so long? I think Brother Dan mentioned this morning, what was it, 20 years or something like that, that he had ran from Saul? And we could say, well, why did he have to take such a long route to be king? You can't say it was because he was so young, because there were so many kings that came after him. Some of them were 8 years old when they became king. And so surely God could have let him be king by whatever circumstances he chose to do so. But yet God allowed David to go the long way, I'm going to say. The long path. And why would he do such a thing? So here David is anointed king. And we can look at his destination maybe as being king. And he could wonder, why do we have to go a long way about it? Samuel anointed him and then just left. Didn't say he gave him instructions or gave Jesse instructions for how to help David. You know what David did? He went right back to his job at watching the sheep. And you might ask yourself, why? Because the sheep were part of his journey. The sheep were part of his path. He learned a lot while out there feeding and taking care of the sheep. He learned essentially how to be a king. Yes, right. Taking care of the sheep. Yes. And so our journey is teaching us a lot of times to prepare us for whatever our goal, if you will, is. Yes. Now ultimately our goal is eternity with God. Our goal is to make heaven our home. Yes. But our journey is every bit a part of that. Our journey is a part of making our character like God. Yes. And so that's what God was doing in David's life. So let's look at Samuel 16 and 18. Then answered one of the servants, let me do 17 too. And Saul said to his servants, provide me now a man that can play well and bring him to me. So Saul was being tormented by evil spirit. And so he needed some music to be played for him so that he could relax, I guess. And so he said, who can play an instrument well? And they miraculously, oh, the son of Jesse is very good at that. And so here they call the son of Jesse. Then answered one of the servants and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is cunning in playing. And a mighty valiant man, and a man of war, and prudent in matters, and a comely person, and the Lord is with him. That's a pretty good resume. Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse, and said, send me David thy son, which is with the sheep. And Jesse took an ass, laden with bread, and a bottle of wine, and a kid, and sent them by David his son unto Saul. And David came to Saul and stood before him, and he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, let David, I pray thee, stand before me, for he hath found favor in my sight. And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. So here we have David, he was anointed. And I don't know what time frame we have from the point where he was anointed by Samuel and to the point where Saul needed somebody to come play music for him, but I wouldn't suggest that it was very long at all. But you can look at this instance and say, well, David's arrived. He's now in the palace. He has an opportunity maybe now to really take his rightful place as king and take authority of the children of Israel in a sense. He's a prudent man. He's mighty and valiant in war and all the things that they attributed to him. And so here he is. Titus, can you bring me that cup of water, please? Thank you. And so here he is. He's in the palace, if you will. There's a little bit in here, but... And so here he is. He's already operating or functioning, you could say, with the hand of God upon him. The Lord, when he anointed David by Samuel, he had his hand upon him. And the things that he did through David was a blessing of the Lord. And so David is being used as an instrument in the hand of God already. And he shows up and he's at the palace and he's ministering to the king. I mean, he's seems like you could say he's almost like right there to his destination, if you will. Let's go to Samuel 17 and 15. So here is the instance where Goliath is stepping out in front of the children of Israel, and he's defying the armies of the living God. And David, we're going to find out where he was at. In verse 15 it says, "But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem." So here David was raised up to come and help Saul. Thank you. To come and help Saul and minister to his needs through the harp that he was able to play. And yet here, not long again after that, we find David right back where he was, back to the sheep, back to feeding the sheep. You can say, well, you know, David, he's more advanced than that. You know, he's further along than that. They said he was a mighty, mighty valiant warrior, that he had, you know, great wisdom and all these things that they attributed to him. But David still needed to be with the sheep. The long way. And if he didn't know, if David knew that God had anointed him king, and I'm open to that possibility, if David didn't know that God had anointed him to be king, he would be asking himself, Lord, why am I back with the sheep? You've already anointed me. You've already declared that I'm to be the king. Why am I here with the sheep? And if you think about it, I mean, everybody else was looking at that almost as if it was the lowest job. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you're the runt. You get the sheep now. You know, all of his older brothers were grown up out of that position, you know. And now, David, you're the youngest. That's what you get. You know, you get to take care of the sheep. But it was part of his preparation. It was part of God making him what he needed to be in order so that he would be able to be king and that he would be able to be a good king. Samuel 17 and 34. So we all know the situation where David was able to slay Goliath and all of that. Let me see. No, we're getting ready to. All right. So David, he was with the sheep, right? And so Jesse, his father, decided, well, I'm going to send David to go see how his brothers are doing. And so David goes to see how his brothers were doing. And his brothers rise up against him saying, who are you? You know, why would you come in here and talk the way you're talking when David said, is there not a cause, right? Who is this Philistine? Who is this uncircumcised Gentile that's going to come out here and defy the living God and defy the armies of the living God and say that he's going to put this under his feet and he's going to make us servants and all these things? Our God is with us and he's got nothing to stand on, right? And this is what David says. This is what David declares to everybody. And his brother said, what are you doing here? Why aren't you with those sheep? Right? Why aren't you back doing what you're supposed to be doing and watching the sheep and let us grown men take care of this, David? It's kind of the sense that you get from him. Like, you need to go mind your business, boy, and get out of here and let us men do this. But David says, no. Is there not a cause?
Yes.
Is there not a God in Israel? Essentially. And I believe that was a spirit of God rising up in David. Not David in and of himself. Not David being proud and boastful and being some big guy or big shot. But it was God rising up in David and helping them to have faith in God. Because all of them were standing around wondering what to do and shaking at the Philistine that was come against them. Verse 34. And David said unto Saul, because Saul had his own, they brought David to Saul and they said, look, this boy said he's going to go out there. And so they brought him to Saul. I mean, what are you going to do? Nobody else has said anything. Nobody else has raised their hand. We've got somebody that wants to go. And so they bring him to Saul. And Saul's like, I don't know what you're doing here. He's trying to figure out. You can't stand against this man. He's a mighty warrior. I mean, this is a giant. And this is the response that David had given it to him. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. Thank the Lord.
Yes.
He kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them. Because he's got big muscles and he knows how to use a sword? No. No. Seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. So David had faith in God. Just like I said, the children of Israel, they needed to develop faith in God so that they would be able to meet their enemies, so they could be able to go into the land and have confidence in their ability to be able to take over the land. You saw what happened when they went to the land and they sent in the spies, and the spies came back and said, there are giants out there. They're huge. We're like grasshoppers in their sight. They've got chariots and they've got walled cities. There's no way we can match them. We can't meet them. We can't fight them. That was their lack of faith in God. And so they missed it. They missed it, folks. They were focused on the milk and honey, and it all sounds great. You're going to give us everything? We're going to go on in there and just take over? That sounds wonderful. And they're focused on that. And they missed the elements along the way that was going to give them that ability to do that. They missed the opportunity to learn how to have faith in God, so that when they got to the land, they were too afraid to go in. They couldn't go in. And even when they decided to try to change their minds about it afterwards, they're like, no, don't go. They try to stop them, don't go. The Lord's not with you, because they weren't operating in faith. And so David, in watching the sheep, which maybe to him seemed like, why am I still at the sheep? You know, you could say Brother Dan's message this morning, success. David's sitting there thinking, what kind of a success am I? I'm still watching the sheep. I'm the youngest. I'm always going to be watching the sheep. Everybody else is getting to do what they want to do. And now I'm stuck here. And doesn't realize that is where his success lies. In doing what God has put to his hand to do. And he watched those sheep faithfully and was able to deliver them from the lion and from the bear and from whatever other difficulties that those sheep found themselves into, he was able to help them. And he learned to trust in God. He said, this giant has defied the living God. And that's why David was so confident and able to stand out there against the enemy, because he said, this enemy has no leg to stand on. God is against him. And the Lord is going to deliver him into my hands. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with you. And we know how the story ends, in that he goes out and he defeats the enemy. Overcomes the giant. Overcomes all the obstacles. Has he arrived? You know, he defeats the enemy. He defeats Goliath. He's a champion. Everybody is celebrating David, and, you know, hallelujah. And so David, he becomes part of the army. Saul takes him and allows him to be a part of the army after this. And what's next? Let's go to Samuel 18 in 5. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. I want us to remember that. The things that David did, even though he was not in the position as king, as people looking on that maybe know, hey, David's supposed to be king. David is supposed to be king, and they might rise up and say, no, we got to get rid of Saul. We got to get David in there right now. You think when they sang the song, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000, they weren't saying, let's make David king. They really weren't saying that. They were just glad that they were having victory. But Saul in his mind was like, wait a second. This is not good. They're giving him 10,000 and me only 1,000. And he's seeing a possibility of something turning around. But that was not in David's mind, I don't believe. David did everything that Saul asked him to do. And he behaved himself wisely in all that he did. And he did not at any point in his life that I'm aware of make any kind of decision that would try to undercut Saul in any way. No sneaking around behind Saul's back to try to gather support or anything like that. But David walked wisely in all that he did. And Saul sent him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And it came to pass, as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women came out of the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy and with instruments of music. And the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. It's the journey, folks. He's still on the journey. And all of this is very important. And who David is. And who David becomes. All of this is instrumental in what makes David a good king in the future. Yes. David's willingness to submit and to fall under the authority of Saul was huge in David's ability to be king later on. His ability to follow orders, if you will, or to do that which was required of him or needed for him to do, his willingness to walk uprightly in all that he did in conducting his life, all of that was instrumental in him being ready to be a king. Everything that we have in our lives going forward in this journey is instrumental in whatever it is that you feel like the Lord is your goal, essentially. Yes. which essentially is heaven.
Yes.
But the Lord may have some things for you to do along the path to your way to heaven. And in order to be able to be equipped to do those things, it has to take place on the journey. We can't just jump off into the next frame, but we have to walk in this journey going towards our goal. And so David starts as a young man, is feeding the sheep. He then finds himself at a different position of ministering to Saul with music. Now he finds himself as a part of the army, and then he finds himself as a captain of the army. And then what? And then he finds himself as an exile.
Yes. That's right.
To the Israelite. And he's running for his life. For however long.
Yes.
And he gathers up a ragtag crew of other individuals that are ill-favored in the sight of the king.
Yes.
And they're going about. Are they going about and pillaging the children of Israel? Are they going about and wreaking havoc towards Saul and causing problems in the nation and all that? No, they were not. And in fact, they were blessing the nation. And they were helping where they could. The Kenites, they came and delivered the Kenites. And he asked the Lord, "Lord, will they deliver us to Saul's hands?" "Yes, they will." "Okay, well, we're going to go." But he didn't rise up against Saul. He didn't try to battle against Saul. And like I said, in the opportunities that he had to overtake Saul, he didn't take any of those opportunities.
Yes.
The time where his servant went out and got all the way up next to Saul with a spear and throws a spear in the ground and a water jug and leaves in the midst of the army. An opportunity to slay David or slay Saul. His men wanted to do it because they believed, I'm sure, that David could be king. And yet David said, "No, you're not doing that. We're not going to raise our hand against the Lord's anointed." It was all part of the process. And it was all necessary for David to be a good king. Let's look at Samuel 25. Samuel 25 and 21. So this is after David had been running around trying to keep from getting caught from Saul. And he had his men with him and they were camping out in the fields and doing different things. And apparently at one point of the time they were in a field that belonged to a man named Nabal. And they were a shield to this man's animals out there, essentially. And so when the man was shearing sheep, David thought, "Well, maybe surely the guy will look kindly on us, and so let's send some men over there and see if he won't give us some food as a result of us helping him." And the man refused and sent his servants away shamefully. And now in verse 21 it says, "Now David had said, 'Surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow hath in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him. And he hath requited me evil for good. So and more also do God unto the enemies of David, if I leave of all that pertain to him by the morning light any that pisseth against the wall.' And when Abigail saw David, she hasted and lighted off the ass and fell before David on her face, and bowed herself to the ground, and fell at his feet, and said, 'Upon me, my Lord, upon me let this iniquity be, and let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine audience, and hear the words of thine handmaid. Let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thy handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord, whom thou didst send. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, seeing the Lord hath withholden thee from coming to shed blood, and from avenging thyself with thine own hand, Now let thine enemies and they that seek evil to my Lord be as Nabal. So here Abigail comes to the rescue. Do you know that if David had done what he had intended to do right here and taking this man out, it would have been a blight to him. It would have been a spot or a blemish upon his character, and it would have been something that would have divided the people about their hearts toward David, because he was operating in his own power and his own might and trying to defend himself before Nabal. The Lord didn't tell him to go and do that. The Lord didn't instruct him to go and take Nabal out and his family out. And so as long as David was on the path, and as long as David was following the way of the Lord, the will of the Lord, and I loved it. And as David journeyed through life, he inquired of God, "What should I do, Lord? Where should I go? How should I conduct myself? And what would you have me to do?" And he failed to do that here. But thankfully, Abigail came out and spoke to him. And he had a humbleness of heart and a willingness to receive what she had to say as from the Lord. And he repented of what he was intending to do. And he did not do it. And so, what we do along our journey is very important. It's either going to build us up and help us and strengthen us and improve us and equip us for our goal, or it's going to destroy us and be detrimental to us and make it to where we can't reach our goal. The path is very much as much important as the goal. You know, I could tell of others that had a similar thing. You know, Moses. Pharaoh. I mean, he's Pharaoh's son. And he rises up and kills the Egyptian, possibly thinking that would be how God would intend to use him to deliver the children of Israel out of the hand of the Egyptians. That was the short way. And I wondered myself, was Moses meek at that point? Or did he become meek, the meekest man, if you will, as a result of the 40 years that he spent in the wilderness or in the desert? His journey, the journey where God equipped him, and he went from one that was rising up to one that was humble before God and saying, "Who am I to go? I can't even speak, Lord. Let somebody else do that." It was the 40 years in the desert that God was able to use him and make him and equip him for what it was that he was called to do. You know, you look at Joseph. He receives a dream where all of his brothers and his family are bowing to him. And he could have looked at that dream and thought, why is this not happening? My brothers have sold me to slavery. I've been sent off into slavery. They don't even know where I am anymore. They don't even know if I'm alive. And then I end up in a prison cell for doing the right thing. And he can wonder, why am I doing this long journey? What is this journey anyways? Is this really the path of God that he has set for me? To go through all these obstacles or to go through these hardships and trials? Do you know that God's goal for us is an eternity with him?
That's right.
And sometimes that comes at a cost of some hardships along the way. David ran from his enemies. Joseph ended up in prison, unjustifiably so. They had difficulties along their path, but these difficulties that they faced, or these trials that they faced, the struggles that they had to overcome, David had to rise up against the bear. And I don't know if he was unscathed. I don't know if he caught a scratch or a bite or two while doing that or not. I don't know. But there were some difficulties along their path. And I think sometimes we can just want to get the easy route and get the shortcut and show me how to get there fast. Show me how to get there without the obstacles. Show me how to get there without the struggles. I don't want to have to deal with all of this. And we're getting so focused on the end goal that we're not paying attention to the growth and the learning that's taking place right now. The process that's going to equip us to be what God would have us to be.
Amen.
And that's what I believe he did in Joseph as well.
Yes.
God sent him through a path in order to make him equipped to be what was necessary in that calling, if you will, that he had for Joseph. To be a deliverer for his people and for the children of Israel. I pray that the Lord would help us to mind the path.
Amen.
And not be so in a hurry to get out of the path or to try to rush things or try to get beyond ourselves and allow God to lead us along the path, whatever it might be, where he could take us step by step and give us the growth that we need. Because if we saw things the way God sees them, we would probably go ahead and raise our hand to that long route. If we really knew all of what he knows and is able to see all that he sees in this path that we have set before us. God has good things for us. He has, what does it say? 29, Jeremiah 29:11. I know the thoughts that I have towards you. For I know the thoughts that I think towards you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. You're only going to believe that and have faith in that and know that as if you have faith in God. And you know who he is in your life. You know how he works with you. You know how he loves you and cares for you. And you can be able to see the difficulties that you go through in life as a blessing from God when you're able to know God. And have faith in him. And the children of Israel could have known that about him. That, when they got to the Red Sea, it's like, oh no, he's got us trapped. We're following God and he's got us trapped now. Rather than anticipating what God would do to deliver him out of that so-called trap. And so I think the same would be true for us. And having a heart of optimism about what God is doing in our lives and trying to decipher what he's teaching us or what he's instructing us in or how he's equipping us in the life that we're living day by day and not getting so focused on the tomorrow. I want to serve the Lord and I want to serve him throughout the whole path. I don't want to miss things along the way. I don't want to get so focused on my destination that I forget to enjoy the journey. And so I pray for me. I want to serve the Lord.